From the Danker Studio on Library Square, you're listening to The Rundown. Thanks for joining us. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, we're taking a look at a new process for long-term decision-making when it comes to the future of the Central Wasatch Mountains. We'll speak with Lainey Jones, program manager at the Mountain Accord, a collaborative effort between a variety of public and private interests that hopes to create a blueprint for transportation, the environment, the economy, and recreation in the canyons to our east.
On the west side of these mountains, we've got 1.5 million people, and that population's going to double in 30, 40 years. On the east side, Park City and Summit County are growing, and they're all putting pressure on the same precious mountain range.
That conversation and your top local headlines coming up on The Rundown here on KCPW. First up, though, these messages and Access Downtown. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up ahead on the show, a conversation about a long-term planning initiative for the Central Wasatch Mountains. But first up, we have these headlines. Last Wednesday, Saratoga Springs police officers responded to reports that a man was wielding a samurai-style sword in public. After an encounter with police, the 22-year-old man named Darian Hunt was shot and killed when he allegedly lunged towards the officers with his sword. But an independent autopsy performed at the behest of Hunt's family raises questions about the police account of the incident and could confirm what eyewitnesses say they saw on the scene. For more, here's KCPW's Ryan Cunningham.
According to a statement released by the Utah County Attorney's Office, Saratoga Springs police officers may have been acting in self-defense when they shot and killed Darian Hunt. The statement from Saturday says, quote, "Preliminary evidence suggests that Mr. Hunt brandished the sword and lunged towards the officers with the sword, at which time Mr. Hunt was shot," end quote. But an independent autopsy performed by a pathologist on Saturday doesn't support that account. According to Hunt family attorney Randall Edwards, the autopsy shows that Hunt was shot at least 6 times with a fatal wound in the middle of the back.
I think that probably the most important finding here was that Darian, the shot that killed him came from behind. The Utah County Attorney's Office indicated in a press release he was lunging toward the officers when he was shot. That seems a bit inconsistent with those findings of the independent autopsy. It also seems somewhat inconsistent with witness statements, some of which have already gone out to the media, that indicate that he was shot while he was running away from the police.
The Saratoga Springs Police Department had expressed frustration over the media's handling of the incident in a post on their Facebook page. The post, which was unattributed, read in part, "Everyone should remember that news outlets have ratings they need to gain. They don't report facts, they use innuendo, opinion, and rumor, and then report it as fact." That post has since been deleted. KCPW was unable to reach the Saratoga Springs Police Department for clarification. This incident occurs just a month after a controversial police-involved shooting death in South Salt Lake, as well as the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Because Hunt had an African-American father, his family suggested that the shooting was racially motivated. The Utah County Attorney's Office, however, says there's no indication that race was a factor, and Edwards stopped short of making a similar accusation.
Well, we don't know what the motivation is. Obviously, whenever you have a black victim and a white police officer, the issue of race is going to come up, if only even in the back of our minds. When asked about what possibly could be a motivation, I think that this grieving mother indicated that she believed that it was because he was black. But we will not know for certain what it was that was going through the officers' minds at the time that they shot him until we've had a chance to hear what they have to say, and so far we haven't heard anything.
The Saratoga Springs police chief was expected to release a statement sometime Monday afternoon. For KCPW News, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
A California man is pleading guilty to defacing 2 Utah murals believed to have been done by the mysterious British graffiti artist Banksy. David William Knoll will pay $13,000 in restoration costs as part of a plea agreement. Knoll told the judge Monday he was suffering from a bout with bipolar disorder when he drove to Park City and damaged the works on New Year's Eve. County prosecutor says the 36-year-old appears to be himself a frustrated artist. If the restitution is paid by a November sentencing hearing, prosecutors say they won't seek jail time. The murals appeared in 2010 when a documentary by Banksy debuted at the Sundance Film Festival. Silhouetted figures and spray-painted messages by the elusive artist have sold for as much as $1.1 million at auction. And finally today, the University of Utah says that Chase Peterson, a longtime educator who was president of the university from 1983 to 1991, died on Sunday. He was 84 years old. Current university president David Pershing issued a statement on Sunday which read in part, "The University of Utah and the state of Utah were greatly blessed by the service Chase Peterson rendered to thousands of students for more than three decades. Even in these last years, he continued to teach and touch lives in countless ways. He will be greatly missed," end quote. After serving as Dean of Admissions at Harvard, Peterson returned to Utah in 1978 to oversee the University of Utah's Health Sciences program. He became university president in 1983. And that does it for our top local headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. You're tuned into The Rundown. Stay with us. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Now on the show, we turn to a conversation about a new planning process that hopes to lay out a blueprint for the future of Utah's central Wasatch Mountains. We're joined in studio right now by Lainey Jones, program manager for the Mountain Accord, which includes a number of participants who have been at odds in the past, from the conservation group Save Our Canyons to the ski industry promoter Ski Utah. But as I said, they're all now sitting at the same table to try and plan in a comprehensive way the future of our canyons. Lainey Jones, I appreciate your joining us today. So we've seen some pretty serious battles over plans for our canyons over the past few years, and I'm guessing that the Mountain Accord is in some part an effort to try to maybe avoid those kinds of confrontations in the future. Maybe you could address that, but also tell us who all is involved in this initiative.
Sure. Well, what you just mentioned, Roger, regarding all the different proposals we have going on in the mountains is exactly why we initiated the Mountain Accord. So let me talk about who the founders are. We have an executive board with over 20 entities representing a diverse range of interests at the table. And some of those entities are Mayor Becker with Salt Lake City, Mayor McAdams with Salt Lake County. We have federal agencies at the table. And we also have private entities at the table, which is a little unusual for a program like this. We have Save Our Canyons as well as Ski Utah represented. They came to the table and said, "We have a lot of piecemeal proposals going on in this area right now." Let me just name a couple of them that the public will recognize. We have a wilderness bill on the table for the canyons on the west side of the canyons.
Correct.
We had a ski link on the table, which would have connected the Wasatch back in front. We've had all sorts of other proposals. Right now, UDOT is contemplating whether they would keep the guard road open year-round.
Right.
And so the founders of Mountain Accord said that is no way to plan the future of these mountains. We've got to figure out if all of those things work together.
You know, there's a vision set forth, there are goals, then there are metrics to evaluate progress, and these all relate to economy, environment, recreation, transportation, and people can see all of these at mountainaccord.com. But how are all of these categories decided on? And then can you give us an overview of what they are and what the process was to make that happen?
Absolutely. So I was hired back in October of 2013, and that's when the executive board convened and kicked off this process. So the first thing that we did is those four categories were identified by the executive board as the issues we needed to focus on. We went out to the public in January, and we asked the public, are these the areas? Does this hit on the four critical issues we need to be thinking about? And we heard a resounding yes. In fact, I can't really think of any public comments that we got that didn't say all of the issues and concerns I have fall into one of those four categories.
Right.
Then we organized over 200 people around those four issues, and those committees, the system group committees, are comprised of entities from the scientific background, private entities, public entities, a wide range of balanced interests on each one of those committees.
Right, and then they set forth a kind of series of their own goals. And did they agree on the goals that they're putting forth?
We got over 95% consensus on the goals that we've developed so far. So when you get a group of like-minded people that are worried about recreation activities moving into the future, and you talk about what are the goals we're really looking at, we got over 95% consensus on those goals. Now, and same thing with the economy group and transportation and environment group. Had we all put everybody in one big room,
right,
we might not have achieved that level of consensus. But because of the way we're designing this process, we said, let's let each of you dream for a little while just about your area of interest.
You know, your role in this is seems pretty critical. You're creating the space for discussion to take place among groups that have pretty divergent ideas. And I guess it's better for all of these groups to have communication going forward from the outset rather than laying traps for each other. How hard is that? And then why are you suited to this? What's your background that allows you to sort of facilitate this kind of communication?
Well, I like it. Basically, that's my answer to why I'm well suited with it.
Okay.
I have been working in the realm of public projects for almost 20 years now, and I have an engineering background, so I am a critical thinker, and I do work well with people. I got big ears, basically. I've got big ears. I like to listen, and you know, this isn't rocket science. It's about informed public discussion. So those visions and metrics that you just talked about, I truly believe if you get those in the hands of the public and the public can understand several different paths forward and the trade-offs associated with each, and it's comprehensive and holistic, I think you'll get great public feedback. And I think we can make really good decisions in the public realm with just good civic dialogue and good information.
You know, you just sound so optimistic about the process of decision-making here. And I'm thinking about some participants. You mentioned the ones that I'm actually worried about when it comes to making ceding ground to each other. Some groups might always be at odds. Ski Utah wants to connect all 7 ski resorts in its so-called One Wasatch Plan. They're a member of the Mountain Accord. So is the conservation group Save Our Canyons, which you mentioned. And they call the One Wasatch Plan horrible on their website. This might be an impossible question for you to answer, but how do fundamental conflicts of purpose get resolved in a process like this? Or do they?
Well, I think they get resolved by taking a big step back, a big, huge step back, and looking at this area for what it is. On the west side of these mountains, we've got 1.5 million people, and that population's going to double in 30, 40 years. On the east side, Park City and Summit County are growing, and they're all putting pressure on the same precious mountain range. When you think about 100 years from now, we have got to plan ahead for how people are going to get in and out of the mountains and move around them. When you think about it in those terms, both Nathan Rafferty and Carl Fisher both say, let's be prescriptive about our future, let's plan ahead, we have transportation problems, and let's address them. The One Wasatch concept is a recreational concept that only addresses moving between the resorts on ski lifts. It's a recreational idea. And you see where if you take a bigger picture, we've got a lot more agreement on the problems we're looking at addressing with transportation solutions versus, you know, a One Wasatch concept that is about, you know, only connecting the resorts.
Well, I guess, yeah, it's hard to look at any of these things in a vacuum, though, too. I mean, you have to admit that the impact of, you know, of building an interconnected canyon infrastructure would be something that the conservation community would probably have problems with. The thwarting of doing that would be something that a group that was looking at the economics realm of your planning session would say, hey, you can't impede our ability to develop this this area. It's remarkable that all of these groups are sitting down together, but the challenges seem so stark to me.
Well, let me talk again about some areas of commonality that I've heard through this process. So what we're hearing from all of the system groups is that we have a precious, unique mountain resource that's very close to an urbanized population. It's unique, and we want to preserve it. So we do want development opportunities. We do want to be able to get people in and out of the mountains, and let's keep the development at the base of the mountains and outside the mountains so that we can preserve its unique character within the mountains. And that is how infrastructure can help us. That's how transit infrastructure can help us. us. You can see when you look at it through that lens how it's really much bigger than just connecting the resorts with ski lifts. We're talking about a much bigger picture here. So yeah, we got to address that issue head on about ski lifts between the resorts, and we are going to be having a public dialogue about that. But we've got a much bigger fish to fry in terms of looking at our future and how we manage this resource.
You know, you talk about the character of the mountains. I also think about the role that they play for our citizens, not just in terms of recreation, but also in terms of ecological services, from clean water to late season runoff to having snowpack that provides the watershed that feeds this community here, again, a growing community at the same time. Is there a way to resolve the desire to develop in the mountains and the need to protect so that we can actually have population growth, for example?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, first of all, we have spent a lot of time over the past 6 months creating a foundational layer of information and understanding. And what we've heard and what we've talked about on the economic committee is that our water, that water source is precious and it's important to our economy. Mm-hmm. So there is a connection there. There's a benefit to the economy for protecting our water source into the future.
Right.
It's expensive to develop new water sources. We have something that is an asset that a lot of communities would love to have, and that's clean water coming out of the mountains, you know, 10 miles outside of our city limits. And so by creating that connection, there's a common level of understanding about the importance of the asset in a pristine state for the not only the environment, but for the economy, for our recreation experiences. And so that's been foundational, and it's created a common level of understanding for us to have the discussion. So you know what? We don't have a lot of people drawing pictures for developments in the mountains.
Right.
We have some. You know, there's been some discussion about the base of the ski resorts and could we make them better within their existing footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a common theme that's not that offensive to anybody. But nobody's drawing condominiums all over the place.
Right.
We don't have that.
The aesthetic that a visiting tourist wants to see or people who live here wants to see is different than it would have been should you have gone through this process 25 years ago, when the tendency was to build a whole slew of condominiums all over the place. And that, to some extent, destroys the character that draws people to the area. I guess that's probably a balance that you have to keep in mind when you look at this. You know, what kind of room is there for public involvement in this process? How does the public reach out to this broad coalition, the Mountain Accord?
Well, we got a lot of different ways we're engaging the public. And my big message to the listeners today is we need more public involvement. We need to hear from more. We need to hear from more of you. So hop on our website and tell us what you think. You can attend any of the meetings that I've just been talking about for any of these system groups. Our executive board meetings are open to the public. And we actually are going to have a targeted public comment period at the beginning of October where these system groups are going to be producing maps of their version of the idealized future for each one of these areas. And we need to know what the public thinks about these maps. So we need you to get on our website at the beginning of October, mountainaccord.com, and submit a comment and tell us what you think. We're designing all sorts of ways for the public to be able to give us feedback during that period.
And I'll remind our listeners that we're speaking with Lainey Jones, program manager for the Mountain Accord. And when you refer to these systems groups, you're talking about economy, environment, recreation, and transportation. And these are groups within the Mountain Accord that are coming up with plans for the future of the Wasatch Mountains, our canyons here to the east of us. You know, so, okay, the public can get involved by going to the website, checking it out. You also have opportunities for them to come and hear more about this. One of them is actually just this Thursday, which is a League of Women Voters forum on proposed development for the Wasatch Canyons. That's this September 18th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Testament Auditorium at the Salt Lake City Library. Again, this Thursday from 6:30 to 8:30. And there's another one in October.
And we've got another panel event hosted by the Mountain Accord on October 14th. And the time is yet to be determined on that one, but we want the public to come and hear about these proposed systems for the mountains.
And that will also be at the City Library, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
Well, Lainey Jones, there's so much more we could go into. We're kind of low on time here. What are we looking at in terms of when things might start happening, when we might see movement on specific projects within our Wasatch Mountains here?
Well, we are looking to make these critical decisions about preservation, development, and transportation by January of this year. So we really need the public to come out and tell us what you think, starting right now all the way until January. What we're going to be doing is combining these four maps that the four groups are creating. We're going to be combining them all in different ways to show where they overlap and where they conflict. I am seeing a lot more commonality than conflict right now. Sure, we're going to have some specific areas that we need to address, but I'm seeing a lot of commonality. So we're going to combine these in several different ways, and then we're going to shoot those out for the public to tell us about the different trade-offs that were made and the different ways that these four systems can be balanced. And we are going to be arriving at a preferred way to move forward, a blueprint for the future, in January. At that time, we may start an environmental impact statement for any major transportation actions. We may be doing a lot of other things that don't require an EIS. For example, preservation of additional lands.
Right. And so there will be a preferred one course forward coming out of this as soon as January.
That's right.
Okay. Well, again, I just want to thank you. Lainey Jones is the program manager for the Mountain Accord, a collaborative effort that's hoping to make critical integrated decisions regarding the future of Utah's central Wasatch Mountains. Lainey Jones, I appreciate your coming in and speaking with us today.
Thank you, Roger.
And again, just a reminder that this Thursday, the League of Women Voters of Salt Lake is hosting a forum on proposed development of the Central Wasatch Mountains. Topics of discussion at the forum will include the Mountain Accord, which you've been hearing about on the program today, and the effect of proposed ski lifts between resorts. That's this Thursday, September 18th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. in the Nancy Tessman Auditorium of the Salt Lake City Public Library. To hear today's interview or past interviews on The Rundown, check out our podcast on iTunes or visit kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. And thanks again for joining us today on The Rundown. Our show was produced by yours truly, with additional help from Ross Chambliss, Ryan Cunningham, and news intern Mycel Spotted Elk. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune into KCPW each weekday at 5 for The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks once more for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.